easy to say one thing and then do another. Something that my late husband Brady learned the hard way. Many of you know how my oldest beagle Gus loves food, how much that is so. Up until he started to lose his hearing, he would be upstairs completely sacked out on my bed, sleeping through everything as I moved around the house doing things. But as soon as he would hear the seal of the fridge door break as I would open it, a sound that is so quiet that it will forever remain a mystery to me how he ever heard it upstairs tucked in my bedroom. He would immediately bolt upright, leap off the bed, pounding his way down the stairs on his way to find out whatever it was that I was about to pull out of the fridge. When food is present, Gus will not sit calmly waiting for someone to give him something. Instead, he decides to manufacture his own destiny by pushing in and taking whatever he can get to. So when Brady and I first started dating, Gus's strong desire competed for food, competed with Brady's strong desire to eat peacefully on his own. Every time that we ate in Gus's presence, there would be a back and forth where Gus would try to muscle his way in and take Brady's food, while Brady would attempt to force Gus to hold off. Because we often ate in the living room at the coffee table, Gus eventually learned that he could weasel his way up into Brady's lap. And once Gus was there, Brady's soft side would take over and he'd start petting him. It was a win-win for Gus. He'd get a few strokes of love while scheming how to get at the food that was now at his level. Every time this happened, Brady would eventually wise up and tell Gus to get off. But even as the words were leaving Brady's mouth, as he was telling Gus to leave, his hands never stopped petting Gus. No matter how forcefully he said it, Gus just wouldn't leave Brady's lap. During one of these extended contests, I said to Brady, "Your mouth says no, but your hands say, oh, yes." It's easy to do. To say one thing and then do exactly the opposite. It's not a new thing either. The Israelites were doing it long before we were. Something that God reminded them of through the words of the prophet Amos. Amos, who was among the shepherds of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of King Uzziah of Judah, and in the days of King Jeroboam, son of Joash of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. And he said, "The Lord roars from Zion and utters his voice from Jerusalem. The pastures of the shepherds wither and the top of Carmel dries up. The Lord roared from Zion because Israelites were not living up to their end of the agreement." In the second chapter, Amos says, They sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. They who trample the heads of the poor into the dust of the earth and push the afflicted out of the way. Father and son go into the same girl so that my holy name is profaned. They lay themselves down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. And in the house of their God, they drink wine bought with fines that they imposed. The Israelites treated the people like commodities to be sold. They borrowed the cloaks of the poor and instead of returning them, laid on them beside the altar. They trampled the poor into the dust of the earth and bought wine with unfair fines. And then they turned around and they worshiped the Lord. They sang songs of praise to God, the God who cares about the poor that they trample, the God who brought them out of slavery. The God who taught them not to murder each other and how not to covet their neighbor's property. They said one thing, "We praise you, O God, we are your people." And then they did another. "We do what we want with no regard for our neighbors, especially those who have nothing or little at all," which is where we pick up with today's reading when Amos informs them that God is upset with their behavior. God tells them, I despise your festivals. I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the offerings of the well-being of your fatted animals I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. I hear these words this morning, and I wonder if we are doing the same thing the Israelites are doing, if we're caught in the same cycle as Brady and Gus, the same cycle as the Israelites. I wonder if God's ears are stopped up this morning as we raise our voices in song and prayer, refusing to hear us because we have said one thing while doing another. I hear them, and all I can think about is the thoughts and prayers that we offer after every mass shooting. Amos's words leave me pondering how the thoughts and prayers that became the very air that I breathed for a year or two after Brady's death have become so hollow in the face of gun violence. Or how we can pray for justice while we actively do not do the work to break down the systemic injustices that feed racism. Or how our lips speak words of peace while we type malicious comments on social media, attacking the character of a friend with whom we disagree, failing to truly be able to listen to the other side. Sometimes I wonder how much we say one thing while doing another. Praying to God on a Sunday morning and then ignoring the ways that God is pushing us to be better Monday through Saturday. The God who despises our festivals and takes no delight in our solemn assemblies. The God who, as long as our lives do not reflect the things that we speak on a Sunday morning, doesn't want to listen to the noise of our songs as we sing. Because God isn't interested only in our prayers or the sound of our voices lifted up in praise. God isn't interested in how often we're in worship if our lives aren't changed. God is interested in the world becoming a better place. God is interested in us becoming better people. But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. God is interested in justice for all people. Justice that will be like an ever-flowing stream in a parched land. Justice that gives life to the whole creation. Justice that levels the playing field and treats all of humanity with dignity and respect. Justice that forces us to take some sort of action against the violence that permeates our society. Justice that makes us step back and realize that we are often quick to call violent actions by a Muslim terrorism, but that we do not extend the same title to those who are white. Justice that reminds us that everyone is loved by God, especially the least, the lost, and the forsaken. And that love is not a threat to God's love for us. Thoughts and prayers are not enough, not when there's injustice in the world. Seek good and not evil, Amos says, that you may live. And so that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you just as you have said. Hate evil and love good and establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph. Seek the good who remains with us, showing us the way. The good who will not leave us in our injustice. The good whose promises never fail, even when we do. The good who will be gracious to us, even when we say one thing and then do another. The good who is our God, the one who brought us out of slavery time and time again. The God who loves the whole of creation, and then teaches us how to do the same.